You know, I've had conversations with some phenomenal bass players such as Stanley Clark and Alphonso Johnson, Verdeen White of Earth, Wind & Fire, and Victor Wooten, and old Bootsy Collins, and as well as some local players here in town, Ricky Anderson and Craig Cedric Patterson, and several other people. But one thing they all come, what it all comes down to when I ask them, you know, who would you say are some of your biggest influences? And they mention people like Ron Carter and Anthony Jackson. But one name that keeps coming up is this bass player. You all, folks, you that listen to Midday Medley may have heard of somebody. I think his name is Larry Graham or something like that. And what I can tell you as a point of reference, or as David Letterman said the other night, he's definitely the father of slap bass. Of course, I know you got it. I know he has another term for it. And he, one thing I also remember, him doing, you know, he's also the founder of the group Graham Central Station. That I remember them doing a commercial for Annie Greensprings Plum Wine.
Oh, wow, you remember that.
Yeah, well, I know I'm telling my age, too. But anyway.
Ain't but, mine.
But I do remember that he changed this fella changed the way the bass bass guitar was played forever. When you think about, you know, some of the phenomenal bass players that have come along since he started plucking and thumping and picking and what have you. And so I think it's just appropriate now for me to just go ahead and make the introduction. Welcome to the Tuesday Midday Medley, Mr. Larry Graham.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate that.
Tell me a little bit about how you got started with the bass.
With the bass?
Yes.
Okay, well, my first thing that I did in the entertainment business was I saw tap dancing when I was around 5 or 6. My grandmother, who was raising me at the time, she saw to it that I had lessons. And then I went from that into piano lessons. I played clarinet and saxophone in school and played drums in the marching band. But when I was 11, my father gave me his guitar because he wasn't going to play anymore. And I taught myself to play guitar. And then when I was 15, a mother moved from Hawaii, where she had been living for 10 years, back to the mainland. And we started working together, guitar and vocals, that was me, and piano and vocals, her, and my drummer also sang. So it was the Dale Graham Trio when I was 15. And then we played this one club in particular that in Redwood City, the Escort Club, I remember the name of it. And they had an organ that had bass pedals halfway across, and I learned to play the bass pedals with my foot at the same time playing the guitar and singing. So we sounded pretty full. We had bottom end now. And then after we got used to that, the organ broke down, and now we sounded empty again. That happened bottom. So I rented a bass, a St. George bass. I went to the music store, and I rented it because it was just going to be temporary until the organ could be repaired. And I'm thinking I'm going back to my first love, guitar. But as it turned out, the organ couldn't be repaired, so I got stuck on the bass, not by choice, but out of necessity. And then my mother decided that we were going to be a duo, just piano and bass, no drums at all. So to make up for not having the bass drum, I would thump the strings. To make up for not having that backbeat with the snare drum and so forth, I would pluck the strings. So it's kind of like playing drums on bass. And that's how the style got developed, and that's how, you know, I got stuck on the bass. And the way it became popular is this lady who was a regular at the club we were working at in San Francisco called Relax with Yvonne. She was a fan of Sly Stone, who was a radio DJ. And she heard he was going to be starting a band. And she took it upon herself, we didn't find this out till later, to start calling the radio station and telling him, you got to hear this bass player, you got to hear this bass player. Through her persistence, he finally came down and heard me doing what I was doing and asked me to join his band. And through Sly and the Family Stone and songs like Dance to the Music and Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself Again and others, my thumping and plucking style became popular.
Well, I can tell you, like I said, as a former musician, it was nothing like, I think the mark of a good bass player is when it wasn't just volume, but you had to be able to feel that if you turned around toward the band, you had to, that the bass had to be able to, not only the bass player not only had to thump the strings, but that sound had to thump whoever turned around facing the band in the chest as well.
Yeah.
You know. I read where one of your first major gigs was with Ike and Tina Turner. Am I correct with that?
Yeah, I was 13. This is before bass. I'm on the guitar. I cut my first record when I was 13. But my biggest influence, of course, I listened to Chuck Berry, but my biggest influence was Clarence Gatemouth Brown. Mm-hmm. And he had a song called Okie Dokie Stomp, which I used to come home from school and put that record on, and I learned it note for note. And so when I attended the Ike and Tina Turner concert in San Francisco at the Fillmore West, they invited me up to play, and they knew that song just like the record, in the same key as the record. And I went up and played, and the crowd went nuts, you know, because I'm just this little guy up there playing this guitar. And that was my first big onstage experience. And that kind of like let me know, oh, yeah, I want to do this. I like this.
Well, you know, what I think I read something where you used some effects pedals during the time that you were playing with Sly. You know, rock it back that to, in that direction. That really made your sound stand out. So I gather that's what I heard on Dance to the Music and Want to Take You Higher and that type of thing. Talk about how you add, because I mean, not just any bass player can just go about just getting by with just effects pedals. You obviously had something else to, you know, that was just enhancing your sound or fattening your sound.
Well, see, remember my first love was guitar, so my thinking is like a guitar player. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they always made pedals and stuff for guitar, but I didn't have any kind of mind blocks against trying out effects pedals. So I plugged in to a fuzz to see how it would sound, and I liked it. And so I used it on my solo on those songs that you mentioned, like Dance to the Music and Want to Take You Higher and Sex Machine and others. And so that, you know, that was it. You know, I'm thinking like a guitar player, and so I got into the fuzz, and then later on, wah-wah and other pedals that were made for guitar, but hey, they worked. I liked the way they sounded. And of course, now they make, you know, pedals that are specifically for bass, and the frequency response is more in the bass range.
Okay. Let's see, the other thing. Now, you decided to more or less, you stepped away from the Family Stone, and you were producing a group after that. Was it hot?
Yeah. When I left the group, I really didn't have any intention of starting my own band. I wanted to write and produce. And so I put together this group called Hot Chocolate, which is not the same group that had a hit later on. But this was built around the female vocalist, Chocolate Bank. And so I put this group together to write and produce for them. But they did a gig one night in San Francisco, a place called Bimbo's. And the crowd spotted me, and it was getting toward the end of the show. And everybody was insisting that I go up and sit in on the end of the show, which I did. And it was just a natural click. I mean, you know, of course I knew all the band stuff because I wrote a lot of it, and we did some cover songs as well, but it was a natural. And that was the night Hot Chocolate's bass player lost his gig.
Oh, boy.
So I put myself in the band and changed the name to Graham Central Station.
And from there, you almost caused a car accident here in Kansas City. Friend of mine stuck in this A-track. I think it was 8-track. Well, I know we're dating ourselves again. But anyway.
Yo, that's okay.
I think it was the first album. And I heard this song called Ain't No Fun to Me.
Uh-huh.
And before I could get out of the car, we had the car almost turned over. Because we were in the car rocking. I mean, this is a parked car. This wasn't rolling down the street. But nevertheless, you went from there, and talk about some of those experiences. Once Hot Chocolate became Graham Central Station, seeing you on ABC's In Concert, yes.
Oh yeah, I remember that show. Yeah,
and it was just by the time you did that Andy Greenspring's commercial. It was clear. And I said, now here's a man that's been sitting back in the background when he was with Sly, but suddenly camera does a close-up, and he starts talking to not only the audience there, but the TV audience as well. I said, well, he's a natural salesman. Look at this. You know.
Well, I mean, I had good examples to follow when it came to leadership. My mother was a great band leader, and then of course Sly was as well, and so they were great influences on me when it came to leadership and being able to be out front and entertain, you know, an audience.
Well, and I was going to ask, what you consider to be and the things that you were able to take from that experience with Sly to that you incorporated with Graham Central Station. And for the lack of a better way to say it, your more solo career.
Yeah, well, Sly and the Family Stone, Graham Central Station is really just an extension of that. We just continued on in the same mode, the same type of self-containment. Of course, having a female in the group, and each person singing various parts, so it's very strong similarity because that's where I came from, and so naturally the kind of group I would put together would be something similar. So we're an extension of that. We just continued on in that mode.
Okay, well, tell me this, because I'm about near the end of this, and what would you say besides, just that creating that style of playing the bass and obviously your vocal, what would you say up to this point in your life has been, would you say would be the legacy of a Larry Graham?
Well, two things. One is my bass playing, because, as it turned out, at first bass player cover our songs, you had to kind of learn what I was doing, and with videos weren't as popular there then, but when you would see Sly and the Family Stone on television or in concert, then the bass players could see what I was doing and see how I was playing, and then if they were to play Thank You or something like that, they knew how to maneuver their, particularly right hand, with your thumb and your forefinger. And so they saw that. So they knew they had to do that. Then, in time, they started incorporating my style of playing in their own original music. So then it became like a style for bass players to play. Even though many would play the overhand style, which is two fingers over the top of the bass, bass players that predominantly play that way, they still learn how to thump and pluck so they could do it when necessary. So I think the bass has been a contribution, but also with the success of One in a Million, I think vocally that I was able to contribute something for singers with a bass or baritone voice, as Billy Eckstein was. I met him at an airport one time, and he said, "Thank you for carrying on the legacy for baritone singers." And that was the biggest compliment I could get from somebody like him. It's like, yikes, So I think those two areas, vocally and my bass, I've been able to contribute something.
You went on to, with GCS 2000, that album. That was a collaboration with Prince, wasn't it?
Yes, uh-huh.
And tell me a little bit about that association, working with the Purple One.
Well, I mean, he's, not only a close friend, we're more like, like brothers. We actually hooked up about 12 years ago. I was playing a show in Nashville, Tennessee. Earth, Wind & Fire, Tina Marie, Sinbad.
Goodness.
And Graham Central Station. And Prince was playing a big arena there, and he heard I was in town and invited me down for an after-show jam. And so I accepted, and I went. And I didn't know at the time that he was raised up on my music. He listened to Sly and the Family Stone, but by the time Graham Central Station came along, he was older and more into having a band and so forth and writing. And so anyway, he was into Graham Central Station, and he knew all my stuff. So when I went up on the stage, everywhere I went, he was like right there, right on it. I was like, yikes. And so he asked me after that jam session that night if I would join his tour after my tour, and I accepted. And so he had a lot of questions about the Bible. He knew that, that I'm one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and we study the Bible, regularly. So he would ask me all these questions, and I would answer them from the Bible, never giving him my own opinion. And so he really, really liked that. At the time, my family was living in Montego Bay, Jamaica, where we had been for 7 years, about to move back to California. But he asked, would we move to Minneapolis, Kansas, actually, to teach him the Bible. We accepted, and that's how we ended up in Minnesota. And, you know, through our studies and in time, he became one of Jehovah's Witnesses. Mm-hmm. And we became closer and closer, not only as friends, but we like family, and my family is like his family, and we're next door neighbors as well. So that's our hookup.
Cool.
He showed up last week when we played B.B. King's, and he sat in with us, and that was fun. He surprised us. He didn't tell us he was coming.
I can tell you it was good to see you on the David Letterman show.
Well, thank you.
And I also revealed that the song "Can You Handle It" turned into an audition that I had to go through in another band. And I guess I've been listening to, you know, by that time, you know, this is well after the near car accident in the parked car. But I think that by the time I got to hear this one group and they were playing that song, we also freaked that band out because I had never played with them before yet. I was able to play the horn parts.
But
they were doing practically a verbatim, or, you know, a cover. They were doing a good cover of it, so.
Oh, wow.
But I can tell you that Sly and the Family Stone and Graham Central Station was required. Their songs were required in the songbooks of local bands here.
Oh, wow. So, wonderful.
And you know something, I'm about to close here, and I just want to thank you for taking the time out and ask you, when do you think that you'll be making an appearance here?
You know, I don't know when we'll be that way, but we're trying to start covering a lot of cities here in the United States now, mm-hmm. Like we did last week. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to continue on with that. But hopefully, if we don't get there, you know, this year before winter, hopefully we'll get there sometime next year.
Okay.
I'm hoping.
Could you do me KKFI?
Hi, this is Larry Graham, and you're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Can you handle that?
Great, great, great.